The summer I turned 14, I went to visit Geneva, Switzerland, with my cousin's family. At the end of my stay, my parents came up to pick me up, having driven all the way from Sicily to Geneva, and we were to go back down sightseeing. Between Switzerland and Italy lay the Alps, and one of the ways to cross them, if you don't have elephants and go through mountain passes, is going through the Mont Blanc tunnel. This tunnel is 7.2 miles long, and it was built in 1958, and it's a pretty impressive feat of engineering on the same levels of FDR's Great Works project here in the United States. It took many years to build. The two-lane highway, in my memory, is a long gray tube that took us from a French bucolic paradise. The entrance is actually in France, not in Switzerland, but near Switzerland, to the noisy reality of Italy, in what, in my recollection, was a worrisome long time. I started wondering if we were ever going to make it out. Oh, I'm sorry. Since that day, it's been a while, and I know that the trip was only a few minutes, but in the middle of that trip, that 7.2 miles trek, with so many meters of rock above us, being literally under the biggest mountain in Europe, I started wondering if I was ever going to make it out. And truth be told, the same thought still crosses my mind whenever I am in any tunnel, anywhere in the world. That's ridiculous, right? We all know that tunnels end. The tunnel in question is kind of straightish, not doesn't go around like some others do, has a finite length. And we were to emerge into a different, some would say more colorful, others would say less tidy landscape with the border guards at the ready, us, our identification in our hands. Thousands of people do this every day. Hundreds of people worked on this project. Wikipedia notes that it took 4.6 million man hours to complete it. The technical skills of a half dozen of old school engineers, the ones with the slide rule, making sure everything worked. It wasn't going to collapse. The air was flowing. Emergency phones were there every 100 meters or so, or yards. And yet, I wondered, in case you might think that nothing bad ever happens inside long tunnels in Europe, in 1999, some 20 years after that August day I crossed under, the tunnel was the scene of a horrible tragedy when a Belgian truck caught fire and blocked the road, causing many deaths and injuries among those who were inside the tunnel at the time. And so how can I be sure to emerge safely on the other side? I couldn't. I can't. No one can. So what should one do? Worry all the time? Pray so the bad things don't happen to us? What about when bad things do happen? It's been a long winter. It feels like I've been in a different kind of tunnel, but one just as gray and long, as interminable, but as real as the one carved in rock that I crossed many years ago. And I don't know about you, well, I do know about a lot of you, but for me, things have been downright depressing these past few months, from the weird weather to world events to sad things happening in the community, in this congregation, to my family and friends, at work, and through all this, I felt as if my soul was asleep. I felt I'd been going through a tunnel, hoping the mountain wasn't going to cave in on me, and wondering where the spiritual hibernation would ever end. I wanted, like Albert Camus, to find my invincible summer in the depths of winter, but for what seemed like a very long time, nothing came up. Then I had a thought. Maybe my soul feels asleep because I'm experiencing a loss of faith. Or more accurately, an absence of faith. Perhaps, I thought, when we are in a tunnel and start wondering whether or not we are ever going to come out the other end, we need to have faith. A friend of mine is battling her second and much worse occurrence of cancer. And she keeps an online journal for us friends that are far away. And a few days ago, after hearing more bad news, she wrote some thoughts on faith and prayer. And I've asked her if I could share this with you all today. And here's what she wrote, a piece of what she wrote. Is praying for my own health a legitimate request from God? Is that selfish? Is praying for someone else better than praying for myself? She continues, I've often said that I'm not a believer because I do not have faith. I have said this so often that I no longer know what I meant by that. This writing stayed with me, and I really wish my friend wasn't sick. When I read her piece, I wanted to talk to her about what she wrote, to send her an email or a comment that could lift her spirits and clarify her questions. But nothing came to mind right then. I'm not really quick on my feet. All I could do in the moment was say, read Forest Church and Anne Lamott. But I did not add any thoughts of my own. But I kept coming back to the question of what really is faith. Is it wishful thinking? Is it magic? Is faith needed? Why? Can there be faith without belief? Can there be faith without God? You see how one can get into a lot of trouble questioning these kind of things. So when I was asked if I could be in the pulpit today, I answered yes, essentially because of what my friend wrote and the type of thoughts it had dislodged. So today, I'm going to share with you my journey to the meaning of faith and beyond. Being trained as a scientist, every time I have a question about the nature of something, I try to break it down to the simplest components. So this is what I did this time as well, and I admit I wasn't expecting some of the stuff I found. Here's one. The word faith is often used as a synonym for religious denomination, like we are of the UU faith. But this is kind of a semantic misdirection because all the world religions have an element of faith in it, but they themselves are not faith. They're belief systems. I hadn't even thought of that before last Tuesday. I used to think faith and hope were one and the same. After all, the phrase have faith is used interchangeably with don't worry. And it's almost always followed by everything will turn out okay. And that up until I started asking questions, I used to think that having faith meant you had to believe in God, especially in the anthropomorphic, patriarchal, capital G God, that Santa-like father figure who is going to make it all better. Concept that doesn't really sit all that well with me. Now digging deeper, I'm not so sure God is necessary inside the discussion of faith. I found that faith is not hope, faith is not religious denomination, it's not belief, it's not blessings, it's not prayer. But underneath these things that faith is not, there is a common structure. Finding that, I thought, could get me to the baseline definition of faith. So here's what came to me after I let these concepts percolate in my mind for a bit. Faith, stripped naked of its adornments, is the ability to let go of control over our circumstances without any outcome in mind. When we have faith, we abide. We accept all the possible outcomes of, say, going through a tunnel. We accept, as Forest Church said in the reading, the dual reality of being alive and having to die. Thus, we get religion and belief and hope, and maybe we even pray. Remember the first time you came to this church? Did you expect to sing or meditate more and thought there wasn't enough of that during the service? Or maybe there was too much singing and too much meditating? Did you stand up or stay seated when you were or were not supposed to? Did you go to coffee hour? Did you feel uncomfortable and out of place because you were new? I kind of hope you said no, but I mean, I see you keep coming back. So, I mean, if you're new, please don't feel uncomfortable, but if you're not new, you're coming back. So I think your early experiences were definitely positive. But if you did any of these things wrong or weird, were you then able to sit with the mild awkwardness that comes from being in an unusual place with unusual, unknown people? Don't worry, I don't judge. No matter what your first experience might have been, I'm just bringing it up because when this sense of awkward, mild discomfort that we experience in these unusual situations gets harder to bear, when it's too much for you, that is when it's difficult to abide. Well, the sense of awkwardness varies from person to person. For some people, it's awkward. For other people, it's not. And from each individual person, it might vary from minute to minute even. But at that awkward moment, that is when faith, hope, and belief play an important role in helping you sit with the awkwardness. The advantage of abiding is a saner view of the world, a deepened sense of compassion, a more loving heart. Acceptance changes the way we view things. It moves us out of our tunnel into some sort of open space of the soul, clean air, room to stretch. Trust and fall backwards, not because someone will be there to catch us, but even if nobody catches us, it's okay. Abide by whatever life puts on our plate without squirming. This is all very appealing, but it's definitely hard, especially when we do it without a reference point, without an element of help, especially when life puts unpleasant and unwanted things on our path, from rotten weather to job worries and to cancer that won't go away. Attempting detachment without hope and without blessing for us untrained minds may lead further toward desperation than away from it. Besides, there's something to be said for letting hope and belief intertwine with abiding to form the structure of faith. Hope and belief are not mere decorative elements. They help us cope with life's uncertainties and help to make faith intentional and redemptive. Intentional, because with hope and belief, faith gives life a purpose. And redemptive, because with purpose, we truly are able to let go of control of a situation and actually help others. It's no secret that I've had somewhat of a difficult time this year teaching RE. I thought I had the right tools and that teaching a bunch of 7 and 8 year olds was gonna be a breeze. I will enrich their lives, I told myself. I'll imbue their minds with the UU principles. Yay! I felt a smug sense of control going into my first lesson. But then the whole thing unraveled. And I quickly found out, if I had known my before, that teaching 7 and 8 year olds is like herding cats. Despite the epic fail I felt in the pit of my stomach, I kept on doing what I was supposed to do. But nothing seemed to work. At the end of each lesson, I grew more and more disappointed with myself. What's wrong with me? Then, one time, I just gave in. I threw away the lesson plan and told them that during my lesson they could do whatever they felt like. And sure enough, they responded. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but I think they had fun. And I think they learned something. So, I helped. Okay, but is it possible to have faith without attaching it to God? At this point, you may be wondering why I'm going through this exercise of decoupling the idea of faith from the idea of God, or at least the more traditional idea of God, the man in the sky. Do I not want to believe in a supernatural entity that can answer my prayers? Well, truth be told, I have a certain natural reluctance to believe in this father figure that will take care of me in inscrutable ways. Except maybe when I'm on the edge of a cliff or in a trench being shot at or at the doctor's waiting for news, hoping it's good. But that's not the only reason, and in fact, it's not even the main reason. I feel very strongly that we have to be careful what we use to prop up our faith, what or who we intertwine in our practice of abiding. A collective religious experience where, to quote the first reading, we don't really see the barn, but we still take pictures of it, it's not the experience of faith I'm looking for. That type of faith is, as DeLillo points out, an accumulation of nameless energies. And furthermore, if faith means faith in God's will, what kind of God do we want to envision? Is it a loving presence, or is it the God that allows horrible tragedies to happen in the world? Because if we attach ourselves to spiritual tourism as a type of belief, or to a God that wields wrath, hate, and destruction, then abiding in this faith means we're still inside a tunnel. This particular tunnel might be larger and brighter, but it's still a tunnel, and we cannot make enough space to let our soul truly become accepting of our circumstances and others. As Unitarian Universalists, our belief systems are individually discerned and non-dogmatic. We are free to pursue our truth, and we welcome everyone's ideas at the table. We are the literal translation of the word heretic, which in Greek means free to choose. UU theology must then say something about this God and faith. I don't have a whole bunch of Unitarian theology texts. Maybe I should change that. Anyway, what I do have is this book. If UU and U2 gets ever offered again, I strongly recommend you sitting in. The lectures are nice, nice dialogue. So this book, for those of you who don't have this book is a compilation and an explanation of the UU sacred. Yeah, it's very good. So I picked it up and I realized that I was looking for something. I wasn't really sure what. And then I looked at the index, and the names of the chapters in this text refer to and paraphrase what Unitarians have formalized in their bylaws, those seven things that Eric Johnson was talking about during his sermon a few weeks back. But they're paraphrased, so they're not exactly those chapters. And so when you look through the index, the chapter index are awakening, experience, deeds not creeds, the known and the unknown, the cathedral of the world, dialogue, neighborhood, expectations, beyond idolatry, mind and spirit, for the beauty of the earth, and returning to the springs. It is probably not a coincidence that when I was looking at these chapters titles through the lens of trying to find faith independent from God, I saw a story arc of how faith can actually take root. This is just the titles are the story arc. And in this story, in the UU story of faith, God is entirely optional. The story arc tells me that at first we must awaken to faith, relate it to our experience, make it a practical faith where we help others, find systems of belief that are right for us. be tolerant, and cultivate ourselves in the world. Only then we can abide and we can make space, let go, and come out of the tunnel. So maybe.